Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I want to tell you about the first time I was 21 years old and I saw $6 million of cash right in front of me. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. That's what $6 million looks like. Insane. How the hell can I get this kind of money one day? And the guy who had the $6 million was a Jewish businessman who owned dealerships in San Fernando Valley area. And he gave me an advice at 21 that completely changed the way I do business till today. By the way, if you get value from today's message, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. Here's what this Jewish businessman told me. I said, how is it possible you got this much money and you're in your mid-30s, $6 million cash? He says, Patrick, there's one thing you need to know about Jews. I said, what's that? When one makes money, five make money. I said, what? He says, when one of us makes money in a business, five other Jews make money because we like to make money in groups. I said, so what's the benefit of that? He said, everybody keeps doing business together. He says, too many people, ethnicities, nationalities, cultures, backgrounds, they just want to be the one making money. They don't want anybody else around them making money. And then eventually they wonder, how come nobody wants to go into business with me? Because when you make money, nobody else makes money. So ask yourself the question. Number one, the person you're working for, does he make money and do you make money? And number two, the people that work with you, who report to you, if they give their best, do they also make good money the way you're making money? If the answer is yes, you're in a great place. Go do your part, and eventually you'll make your money like that Jewish mentor shared with this 21-year-old 23 years ago. If you got value from this video, give it a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. And if you've never watched a video, 20 Rules of Money, How Actually Money Works, click here to watch the video, 20 Rules of Money. Take care, everybody.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Solar Now is a renewable energy company that began its operations in Uganda in 2011. It currently has 47 operational branches in Uganda and 9 operational branches in Kenya. Solar Now provides both small household systems which range from 50 watt peak to 200 watt peak and large home solar systems which range from 250 to 3 kilowatts. These are both used for domestic and commercial purposes. Solar Now has been able to transform the rural commercial farmers by bringing products like a water pump.
I'm a farmer at Mvubu Village, Narigasa sub-county, Niraka, in Chotera district. I have passion fruits, green peppers, I have coffee, oranges, and I have banana.
Put water in this pipe because it helps the other machine to start.
So after putting that into the water, we put this panel and we connect it on the machine so that it starts. This one, we connect it on the panel after we put on. the water is going into the sprinklers, then the sprinklers will start irrigating. So ever since I joined Solar Now Water Farm, I reduced on my workers. I used to spend 50,000 a day on 10 workers. But as for now, I am only spending just 10,000 on workers. Those 10 workers I had, they used to irrigate using the watering cans. But now, the two workers I have, they only operate the Solar Now Water Farm. I irrigate every time I want to irrigate. The production increased two times. The passion fruit, you can see that they are very many on the plantation. They are very many. Since I go to the Solar Now Water Farm, I get time for my family. I used to spend the whole day in my garden, my Solar Now Water Farm, but now I can get time for my family.
Solar Now, in the process of transforming people's lives in Uganda, has now reached to 20,000 homesteads. We've served systems to 20,000 homesteads. And these are people who are largely initially off-grid.
When you buy it, you have 6 meters in parking. You have a motor here, which enables it to run physically without you attempting to use it manually. It has a pack here for spares that you need in case you want to elongate the pipes for distribution, or in case you want to convert when you're using sprinklers. It also has a handle here in case you want to run it manually, and a panel here in case you want to use it on solar. This pump can actually use to a tune of 5 sprinklers in 5 meters of spacing. Above the ground it can do a height of 10 meters, and then on a hilly sloping ground it actually has a distance of travel of 150. Then on a flat land it's going to do a distance of 300 meters. So if at all you buy it and you need it for a specific kind of irrigation in your garden, You have to put into consideration the different parameters of use.
When you buy a solar system from Solar Now, you have an opportunity of acquiring the system on either cash or credit. And the credit period is up to 2 years, depending on your financial muscle. But you have to pay a minimum of 15% of the total cost of the system. And the other benefit that the customer has from Solar Now is that we have a warrant of 2 years and a free maintenance and service of the system up to 5 years. In this period of 5 years, if your system got faulty, you get service at no cost. You don't need to pay. And at the same time, on top of that, when you buy the solar system from Solar Now, we give you free transportation. You don't need to pay for transportation. You don't need to pay for the installation. So all these are benefits that require a customer who buys the solar system. Solar Now
in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this, because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working, and then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technician, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better. And so I get more customers.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat. I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
All right. Okay, well, continuing from yesterday's podcast, today's podcast is titled, the ideas that I'm expressing on here are not only ideas, but information as a result from yesterday's podcast, plus offline interviews, I mean, not interviews, but telephone conversations and stuff like that. So, House Rent Off-Grid Building Trade School. That's the name of today's podcast, and my dog wants to go out. It's a sunny day, but she's going to have to hold off. Okay, you going to I might go away to bribe her, but anyway, we'll get back to that in a moment. Anyway, House Rent Off-Grid Building Trade School. That's us. And let me start off with this. When, as a matter of fact, if you guys want to chime in on this, what are we told, generally speaking, what are the options that our parents, teachers, the community says that we have upon graduating high school? For most people, it's grades 1 through 12. Amish community, they go 1 through 8. Some people, you know, go to a certain division. They do the GED. But typically, you know, 1 through 12, what options do our parents, teachers in the community, or grandparents, whatever, what options do we tell in their 12th grade? You got to think about what you're going to do after 12 high school. What options do we typically here, 619-768-2945, if you want to chime in on those answers. Now, for me, what I generally heard was option A, go to college. Option B, get a job. Option C, go into the military. And I would say to my friends in high school, that was one of the three options that they selected. Some went to college. I took the college route. Some people went into the military. Some of my friends went into the military. And some got jobs. Matter of fact, some got jobs to help put them through college. But those are three primary options. Now, if you guys know anything more than that, 619-768-2945, that's the number to call so we can get your input on that. Now, there are more options than that, but those are the three primary ones that I heard coming up, and you probably hear those today. Now, you know, it would be interesting to hear what people say about it. Now, why house ran off-grid building trades? Well, I guess I'm an amateur. D and this dog wants to go outside. You're not going outside yet. Well, calm down. Let's see. Oh, man. You know what? This dog's got me trained. You got me trained. All right. You keep on, you're not going out. Okay, let me do this. I'm going to give you guys some time to respond here. Let's see. What are we going to do? Okay. All right, 619-768-2945. Oh, and she disappeared. All right, well, she disappeared for a moment. We're okay. I believe, well, all right, I just gave you the three options that I think most people hear about. After 12th grade, you don't either... If you can, go to college. Number two, get a job. Number three, military. Those are the options that most people are told, and I would say the lion's share of the population follow one of those three paths. Now, there are other options out there. Like, for instance, go to business school. Go to entrepreneur school, learn, start a business, or join the family business. And a lot of family businesses have their own school. That's another option. In the Amish community, in the Mennonite community, to a large degree, in the Hutterite community, those are three options that I would say the typical mainstream person, that conversation is not going around the breakfast table. If you go into, you know, some of these local merchants with the Chinese restaurant carryout, the liquor store, the dry cleaner, around their breakfast table, we're hearing other options than the traditional go to college, get a job, go into the military. You know, they're talking about taking entrepreneurial options years in advance of 12th grade. So by the time they get to 12th grade, they're good to go. All right, now, based on, like I say, I'm an amateur de facto futurist in certain things. And in the United States, There's 142,153,010 households, give or take. Once again, in the United States, now we have like over 330 million people, I think over 337 million people. But out of that number, as total population, there are 142,153,010 households. 79 million households are shared households, families and or people who are renting rooms within somebody else's house. That's called shared housing. Out of those figures, once again, over 142 million and 79 million, roughly about 250,000, only 250,000 of those households are off the grid. Now, I'm defining off the grid as they do not rely on or use municipal water, electricity, or gas. Now, if it's not like in some cities, you know, it might be municipal water. So these homes, these 250,000 homes, do not use any municipal water. And with the power, like for electric and gas, because in many cities, electric and gas are owned by, utilities are owned by private companies. So in the United States, there's roughly 250,000 out of over 142 million households. That's less than 1%. Considerably less than 1% of the households in the United States are off-the-grid households. Now, my futuristic predictions say this. More and more households will be coming off grid. It won't be a mass exodus, but more and more households will be coming off the grid, and more households are coming off the grids, and many people are just starting out off the grid from the beginning, so they don't, because they don't want anything to do with municipal services. They're building homes or retrofitting homes that so that dwelling can generate its own energy. I highly recommend the book by Van Jones, The Green Collar Economy. Highly recommend it. And he talks about this, an opportunity. So now, based on that, There are professions, emerging professions, that if you get on board with it, if you're just looking for a job or you're looking for an entrepreneurial experience, this is where the ball is going. For instance, some off-grid professions, or what I consider off-the-grid professions, or off-grid house conversions, converting a house that's on the grid to a house that's off-grid instead of getting municipal water, you have a well installed in your property. If you can't do a well in your location, then harvesting rainwater. You know, instead of your local electric company heating up your water tank through electricity that you purchase from them, you have a solar thermal unit installed on your house. So off-grid house conversions, there are professions in that are emerging. A lot of your old school people are not touching these professions because they're doing all right with what they're doing now. But a lot of those people are old school. Affordable housing technology and that's for sales of equipment for the DIY people, do-it-yourself crowd. And then there are technicians that learn how to install this stuff to take your property off-grid or house off-grid or even apartment off-grid. Automotive customizers. You go on YouTube, and YouTube is one of my barometers. You have people on there that are learning how to convert their car into a tiny house. They're learning how to convert a box truck into a tiny house. They're learning how to convert a schoolhouse or a used Greyhound bus, put out the pressure, into a tiny house. I call these people automotive customizers or off-grid automotive customizers. That is an emerging profession. Light build repair person or light build repair man. Now, what is that? Some people, we all know what a light bill is, which is an electric bill. But if it's high, too high for your taste, there are people out there right now, and I've simplified the term light bill repair person or repair man, that they can teach you, and they have the technical skills on how you can dramatically lower your light bill or electric bill or totally eliminate it. Emerging profession. You're not going to go to high school for this. There's no trade school, to my knowledge, that offers that. There's no college that offers that. There's no Ivy League schools that are offering degrees in any of these programs. I mean, not programs, professions I'm talking about. Mortgage-free house construction. That's essentially, and the tiny house movement is a good example of this. They learn how to build their own homes. There are people that go on YouTube every single day, and they're learning how to build their own homes. And they don't have to be tiny ones. Minimalist furniture makers, there are people. I was talking to a lady yesterday out of Kenya. She was unemployed, broke, and she taught herself. Now she makes furniture, and her company, she employs 6 people. She's had up to 10 people employed at any given time. Let's see. Non-municipal services communities. There are communities, eco-villages, that are popping up globally that they do not rely on any municipal services whatsoever. Oh, come on now. You don't wait it. You're going to wait a little bit longer to go out. Anyway. Okay, where are we? And then off-grid educators, or homeschooling. You have people giving webinars on how to make money on God knows everything, Facebook, Instagram, Airbnb. I call these off-grid educators that, you know, they're making money. I mean, mobile homes, you name it. There's all kind of courses, off-grid educators. Off-grid educators, they're not at Harvard. They're not at Yale. They're online. You can also find them offline as well. But YouTube, off-grid educators, I call, because none of it's regulated, to my knowledge, and they're emerging. And they're in plain sight, but they're emerging. Let's see. Now, let me go with school and educational options. Like I said, the traditional options that most people, when they reach 12th grade, are you going to go to college? Are you going to get a job? Or are you going to go in the military? Now, there are more options than that. They're trade schools. And with typically trade schools, you know, do you want to be an HVAC person, heating, ventilation, air conditioning? Want to be a plumber, electrician, you know. Unions have schools. And if you're fortunate enough to get in that particular union, they have a school. They have schools within there that they have a classroom maybe 2 or 3 days out of the week, and then you're out in the field the other 2 days a week, or remaining days that you're not in the classroom. And you're getting paid. You know, from that, you might decide to go the entrepreneurial route. So they're trade schools. What we're talking about with house rent off-grid building trade school is we're talking about solar houses, solar cabins, dwellings that they power themselves with water, electric, wind. That's where we're going, those professions, okay, where you don't have to spend, you know, two, three, or four years learning this stuff. Let's see, where are we? Okay. Now, there are also elite, what I call industry schools. Silicon Valley, they have schools within their communities. Hershey, the chocolate, you know, chocolate bar guys, they have a school. Motown, when it was active under Berry Gordy, they had a school that you had to attend at least twice a week if you were an artist. Let's see. And then they're even Booker T. Washington, when he was living, he had trade school. He taught at Tuskegee. In addition to academics, you learn industrial or building trades. And then for some people, he even taught them how to build their own towns. Their Booker T townships, of which we're going to have somebody on next week to talk about the Booker T towns. So what we want to do with House Rent is essentially teach these emerging skills, okay? You know, solar housing, you know, water farming, stuff like that, stuff where you can eliminate your utility bills, mortgage payments, rent payments, and things of that nature. So this dog doesn't stop. I don't think we're going to go out soon. All right, so it's kind of quiet out there today. So we don't have any hands up. So what I'll do. Oh, in Factory City, the audio that we play often, as you heard in that audio or video, if you've seen it. Okay, they, they have a lot of that. They have schools, you know, how to make coffee pots, blenders, whatever they're making. So we want to follow the same light. Okay, now, all right, we got a super quiet Friday here. So since, I tell you this, we'll play one more audio. And, oh, wait a minute, the audio I was going to play disappeared on me. Okay, well. All right, what I'll do is this. Let me tell you a little, let's see, I don't want to play that one. And let's go on a little bit of Steve Harvey, and then if we have no takers by then, we're going to wrap up early for the day.
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I didn't have nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone. And I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages. So I called and I punched in the code and the man said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home. Because this is it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, wanting to be on TV, I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It says, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This is a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back. And I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida. And that night, I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone, I call Chuck Sutton, I say, hey man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I call Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I park my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't gonna move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the sixth floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduced myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I'd have had this four pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.O. Hughley went downstairs. D.O. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened. The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just say, Lord, Lord, Lord. And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I had never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because the Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at the Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York. I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.